Welcome to the Sports Report Podcast with Ben, Ricky, and Jalen. We cover trending and popular topics surrounding the world of professional and on-campus sports. With each of us having a unique sports background, we give different perspectives and insight on the current climate of sports news. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the Sports Report Pod. I'm Ben. I'm here with Jalen and Ricky. Classes in session. I almost forgot. today.
Class has been in session.
Yeah. It has been. It's exciting. We got the playoffs here. We've got the last few of the play-in coming up. And then we're also going to go through awards today because awards are going to be coming in next
week. Exciting, exciting, exciting.
So it's a great time for basketball right now. But let's start with the play-in. We'll start with your Kings.
Let's go.
Jalen. They upset the Warriors. Might have ended their dynasty.
That feels good.
And I know after last year, that's got to feel really good.
Yeah. After a grueling seven-game series and little Bay Area rivalry started last year, glorious 2.5 hours of basketball sitting, watching at 7 o'clock that day. But I remember thinking during the pregame, right before that game was starting, like, okay, the Kings are going to go up by... I remember thinking the Kings are going to go up by 15 at some point in this game. Probably going to be early. But as a viewer, I cannot get excited when we get a lead because obviously with Curry and how explosive he is and just overall Golden State, how fast they play and they can put up points so fast. And just also with them blowing the leads at the end of the regular season. But they went up big and I was just not showing any emotion at all. And then the lead swells to 25, 26 towards the end of the game. Time's ticking down, and it's like, oh, my goodness, they might get it done. And then a couple dagger shots and Clay going 0-for-10 from the field. And the Warriors really had no answer for any of the Kings' offense in the second half. And I was very surprised that the Kings were able to shoot from three consistently the whole game. Keegan Murray had 32. He had probably one of the best games of his career.
100%. That's definitely his best playoff type game.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and he was so big in the series last year as a spot up 3-point shooter and an on ball defender, and he kind of took that role into he just was in that same role but multiplied. He started off the game guarding Steph, and just the shots he was taking, and he's getting much more confident as a 1-on-1 scorer too. So, but we got the Pels now who dominate us 0-5 against the Kings.
No Zion, though.
Or Kings are 0-5 against them.
Yep.
But yes, I'll let you guys talk about that a little bit, Ben. The Lakers got past the Pels. And Zion was feasting that game.
I don't know if we would have won. He was giving you in the game.
Yeah, but he comes out with 3.5 minutes left, and that turned the tide of the whole game. Because the Pelicans, that place was so loud.
It was. And he was their only really productive scorer that whole game. Yeah. CJ had a rough game. Ingram wasn't even getting closing minutes. I know we talked about that. It was only his second game back, so he played 24 minutes in the whole game. Zion was – he was going to carry them. He may have gotten them the win, but once he was out, it was okay, they got nothing now. Even with all the depth on their roster. And – down the stretch, D'Lo hit the corner three to seal it. Mm-hmm. Reeves was driving to the paint, and the defender, for some reason, decided to double him when D'Lo's in the corner. I get it if it's a non-shooter, but D'Lo's been 41% this year. So left him open. He hit the shot, kind of getting his reputation back as a clutch player after last year. Mm-hmm. Against Denver, he struggled, and hopefully against Denver this year, he'll be better too. But, yeah, big win. And now they'll take on Denver. Ricky, what was your takeaway from that game?
Yeah, it was getting a little spooky for y'all. I'm not going to lie. Towards the end of the game, Jose Alvarado was torching.
He was
doing very good. Finding guys, making shots, playing good defense. I was kind of surprised that they didn't have Brandon Ingram come in towards the end of the game. I know that he's trying to still find his groove and still trying to, find himself back in the rotation because of his injury. But once Zion came out, I'm thinking, all right, they got to bring him back in and try to incorporate him somehow, try to get him involved. I mean, it's a close game. It's a, it's a not a must win, but you guys got to, need to win this game. I was surprised there, but they're doing good. I like how the Lakers closed it out. They figured out a way. LeBron put the bootstraps on and got to work. Yep. AD was good down the stretch. D-Lo was good down the stretch, like you say, made the corner three. As far as the sack game, I was pleasantly surprised on how well they did with Curry the second half.
Yeah.
I seen them creeping back up a little bit going to half, and I thought Curry was going to explode the
Me
third
too.
Half, but they really contained them. They did a good job containing them, and Keegan Murray was consistent, which was good. I think if Keegan Murray stays consistent and steps up to the plate and takes kind of that Malik Monk role, and you know, the backups like Davion Mitchell and everybody, Trey Lyles, that are also playing like consistent, sold you on your parlay.
I know,
but he was
one more three from him.
He was still doing good finding the guy.
He had a good game.
He was finding the hot hand. You got to give it to Keegan Murray if he's like what was he? He was like maybe like he was like 5 for 5 first.
Yeah, start
first
the game, year. He was on fire.
He was on fire. So you got to give him the ball when he's doing that. But I really liked both of the play-ins. They were good games, very good games.
And yeah. Zion. Sorry to interrupt, but going back to that Lakers game, Zion was visibly frustrated when he was coming off.
Yeah.
After he got hurt. And I know so much of the sports basketball world has kind of put this stigma on him of, you know, maybe not being the most mentally tough. You could see he clearly wanted to be out there in a playoff game.
Yeah.
And he was feasting. There's no reason why, you know, he would have left for that reason. But I think the talking point that the injury does bring up is his conditioning and his physique and his mm-hmm. style of play with that too. He's so physical and he's so athletic that he can do all the stuff that he's doing right now with the build that he has, which is kind of a double-edged sword now that we see. It's hard to stop, but at the same time, it might be hard to sustain.
Yeah.
You know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall, and that dude's so big.
Yeah.
And what was it? Was it ankle or?
I think hamstring.
Yeah, it was something.
Soreness.
He's out for a few weeks,
something.
Few weeks, though, from it, so
yeah.
It's not like something he could have kept playing
yeah.
through.
Yeah.
It's difficult because just like how you said how big he is, I think, I mean, I'm not a doctor or no NBA trainer or nothing. I think the way he jabs, the way he takes his, like, you know, his fake steps, lands, just different stuff like that is kind of the reason why he might be experiencing those issues. Because the way he jabs, like, it's like he's – it's like 100%. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to jab 100% every time, especially – you're that size, like, the defender is going to be intimidated regardless of whatever move you make. So jab stepping that hard isn't necessary.
It's like he's almost, like, too aggressive with how he just moves around in general, just walking, like, even if he's not on the basketball court.
Even when he walks, he's, like, stomping like a giant.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
when he came off the court.
Yeah, Smoothie King Center was shaking. There was, like, a 1.5 earthquake in New Orleans.
That's, like, so I know when he came into the league, everyone was like, yeah, he needs to work on that, and still a problem here. I think this is fourth year in the league. This
yeah.
was one of his more healthy seasons for sure, but then in the biggest game of the year, he gets hurt after like 41 points, I think he had at that point. So it's tough, but I think going back to how you're talking about Brandon Ingram coming back in, obviously he didn't, but against the Kings, I think he'll play a lot more minutes regardless
yeah.
of.
He's going to have to.
Regardless of if he's in a rhythm, they'll keep him on the floor to close out the game. Just because you've seen it, he's an all-star caliber player. He can hit the big shots even if he's having like a 5-for-19 shooting night. He could hit that one that wins the game. So I expect him to be a lot more involved in the offense, even though it'll be his third game back.
Yeah. The record shows it, 5-0 against the Kings, but doesn't need to be said that the Pelicans match up super well against Sacramento. Their game against the Lakers, I know us three were talking about during that game that Jonas Valanciunas barely plays whenever the Lakers go head-to-head against the Pelicans.
Yep.
It's just kind of a tough
LeBron
matchup.
LeBron and AD just spam the pick and
yeah,
roll.
Yeah, they
and,
hunt him
yeah.
on the perimeter. But with the Kings, Valanciunas does a really good job, especially this season, of holding Sabonis down. He's the type of defender, low-post guy, physical guy that will give someone like Sabonis who wants to work, you know, north to south and back to the basket and make plays out of the post, it gives him trouble. Like, Sabonis' numbers have not been very good against Valanciunas this year. So it'll be a completely different game for the Pelicans versus how the Lakers game was. And the Kings are – they have so much firepower that Pelicans depth that you mentioned earlier, Ben, is going to, I think, work out in New Orleans' favor. They can roll different lineups out there and have equal success, whereas the Kings, we saw it against the Warriors. When Fox and Sabonis aren't on the floor together, Curry was just doing whatever he wanted, and they had no answer on the offensive end because Draymond, kind of like Valanciunas, was taking out Sabonis on the offensive side altogether. So not the most ideal situation as a Kings fan, and not the most ideal situation as Pelicans fans out there either with Zion being out. So I think it's going to be a lot of who can close out the fourth quarter and who can mediate the other team's runs.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's critical this game that Sabonis starts hitting that mid-range.
Yeah.
Because they're going to do the same. They're going to do the same thing. Valanciunas is going to sink. It's going to be fool's gold. They're going to keep on giving the ball to Sabonis. Let him shoot. They're going to keep on letting him shoot. And then he's not going to be able to drive like he was doing against Draymond or whoever else was guarding him because Valanciunas is 7'2" or 7 foot, whatever.
Yep.
So it's going to be more difficult for him to be able to get that drive action. They're probably going to put him in a lot of action with De'Aaron Fox like they did in the latter part of the game.
I was just going to talk about that too, Ricky. Can you talk about a little bit to the audience the adjustment that Sacramento made in that second half of Draymond sagging off Sabonis and how they were kind of getting points off that with Fox?
Yeah, so essentially they had Sabonis in the paint. And Draymond was sagging off of him. He was defending him. It was man. De'Aaron Fox, whoever else had the ball on the perimeter, would get the ball into Sabonis, and it would look like an open shot for Sabonis, but he wasn't hitting. He wasn't hitting the other day.
Yeah.
So they kept on letting him shoot. The Golden State was making runs, and eventually Sacramento got into more action with De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. So they'll start doing high pick and rolls, the passing and follow, which is pretty much De'Aaron Fox will pass it to Sabonis, and then De'Aaron Fox will come across or come around him, and it'll be like a screen. And just other things to kind of get him involved, off drives, you know, off different looks. And Sabonis is such a good player. If the drive's not there, he's going to be able to kick it out to open man like we were seeing him do with Trey Lyles threes, Keegan Murray threes, and all that above. So I think if Valanciunas is on him early, Sacramento's going to get into those types of actions real early.
A lot of movement.
Yeah.
Out of all that stuff that you said, I think the most important for them was when Draymond would sag off and Sabonis would kind of be like 18, 19, 20 feet out, kind of like top of the free throw line-ish, and Draymond would just be all the way in the paint, like Ben Simmons style.
Yep.
That allowed, you know, Fox or Keegan Murray or whoever it is to, you know, be on the wings or be in the corner, whatever, pass it up there. Draymond's all the way down. You could pass and follow, go get the ball, right? Now the defender who's on the hip of the guard, you know, he has to get over that screen, but Draymond's all the way in the paint, so it's kind of like a two-on-one. So
exactly.
you can't step up to switch. Yeah. So it's going to be an open mid-range shot for Fox instead of Sabonis.
And that's kind of what the Warriors do too. Like that's where all this offense comes from.
Yeah,
is the
Mike
old
Brown.
Warriors.
Yeah, that's Mike Brown for sure coming over from that staff. We need to get a clipboard, by the way. Like LeBron and JJ Redick's podcast.
Yeah, that'd be insane.
When you were describing it, I was literally thinking this is something JJ would be.
I saw you like he needs a clipboard. He's writing right there on the table.
I was trying to write on my notebook. Yeah. No, so, but it's really interesting. We're going to talk about the East playing because that was a sweaty matchup too. But just the way these coaches are scheming stuff and how each team plays against each other.
Totally.
It's so different from regular season.
Absolutely.
In the playoffs, it's like
adjustments
it's
are
night
so
and day.
Important.
Yeah.
They make them quicker too.
What I was saying is like my favorite part of the playoffs is all the adjustments.
Yeah.
Because like game to game, obviously when it's a series, but the play-in, it's like you got to make them at halftime. And the Warriors were obviously down, so they made adjustments. But Mike Brown adjusted so well, you didn't even really notice it. Like we said, we just broke down the play that kind of got them. Because they were just leaving Sabonis the whole first half, and they were able to make that adjustment. And that came up huge. Let's move on to the East. I know you wanted to talk about that. Break down some of the matchups for us. We had Sixers, Heat, and then we had the Bulls and Hawks.
Yeah, the Sixers and Heat, that was a good one. Jimmy got hurt, unfortunately. I think
he's out, by the way, for the next game.
He's out. I think in the beginning of the game, the Heat were doing very good job containing Joel Embiid with their running his zone. We used to run it back in my college. It's called Fist. Well, it's like it was like a little variation. It's kind of like a 2-3, but it's hybrid. It's kind of like it's like a 2-3 slash man with a lot of rotation. And they're really just making sure that Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid don't get the ball.
Yep.
And they're making sure whoever, you're just going to have to win with somebody else. And that's what they got
done.
That's what Batum did, baby.
Nicholas Batum came through and got him the game. I think if Jimmy was healthy the whole game, though, I think the Heat would have pulled it off at the end.
I think so, too.
I was kind of suspect the 76ers towards the end of the game. They weren't doing a good job taking care of the ball. Mm. But, yeah, that zone was doing a good job on the Sixers. I think that teams are going to be looking at that to kind of exploit and match that.
New York is a very good defensive team, and Thibodeau's a good defensive coach, so he's definitely going to be scheming some stuff up for them. It's going to be interesting for sure.
But it has to be crazy, too, without Julius Randle.
They've been so good without him, though, too.
They're going to – Sixers, to your point, are going to look to feed him the ball as much as possible, especially down the stretch.
Yeah, it'll be Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein.
That's going to be an ultimate chess match of – you got this guy that, you know, maybe doesn't match up against us when we're healthy. All of a sudden, we're not healthy. But, you know, the roster, how they're placed, Tibbs, like we said, it's just such a fun matchup that is. So, yeah.
I kind of think they're going to leave Embiid one-on-one in that series.
No way.
Well, let me explain why. Mitchell Robinson is a good defender. Like, obviously, Embiid's a different player. He's still going to get his. But they have all these defenders that could go on Maxey and take him out of the series. They could rotate between OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, DiVincenzo.
DiVincenzo, a solid defender. Go out there.
I think they're going to try and get Maxey to have a bad series and make it Embiid and the others stepping up. I think they'll run some zone, like you said, to get Embiid out of the game at times. But I feel like Maxey's going to be their priority one.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying they're going to run zone. I think they probably will run man. Mitchell Robinson, he can't guard Joel Embiid, but he's big.
Yeah, he could.
They're definitely, every time, this is what teams do to Joel Embiid. They'll play one-on-one. If he gets the ball, it's automatic trap.
Yeah.
Rather, not on Maxey's man. It's going to be somebody else coming 100%. Rather from the corner or however they run their defense. I think they're going to do that for sure. And that's a good point about Maxey. They're probably going to be able to switch if they have DiVincenzo and Josh Hart on them. So a lot of the pick and rolls and the stuff that they do incorporating their offense is going to be really difficult. It's going to be good. They're going to be able to.
That's really going to be an ultimate chess match.
They match up so well against each other, and they're so different.
Yeah. I think with Randle, it's easily the Knicks in this series, but without him, it'll be six, seven game series.
Yeah. We got to look for Buddy Hield and like Batum and Tobias Harris and guys like that to step up. I think those are the key guys. If they don't step up, then I have the Knicks
100%
in five. They might sneak the 76ers might sneak a game in just because they have Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
But I think it's gonna be five if they don't step up to the plate. One of them at least.
Yeah. Let's shift now to the Bulls and the Hawks game. I know you watched that. What was your biggest takeaway from that game?
My biggest takeaway was Kobe White is out here cooking two All-Stars, sending them home. It was good for the Bulls. I really like how Kobe White has improved as a player. They talked about him a lot on the broadcast yesterday, and I really liked his journey to the NBA and how he said, you know, coming into the league, it was difficult for him because he didn't know his role. Yeah, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and a lot of these players taking his time. Lonzo Ball, they had Lonzo. Mm. So now he's just figuring out, and I love it. As far as Atlanta, I'm confused. They don't play defense. Their offense was lackluster yesterday. Trey, his hand is messed up. I understand that.
I think he's gone, by the way.
You think he's gone?
I think he's gone this summer.
They have to do something because
perpetual cycle.
I'm looking at the game yesterday. I'm like, it's two All-Stars. They're getting beat by, I mean, DeMar DeRozan. Of course, DeMar DeRozan, but Kobe White
and DeRozan was big factors.
But that's what I like about the league right now. Like the role players, the skill gap is getting close to All-Star level, and it's showing really. It's really showing and exposing these teams that are having these two All-Star players, three All-Star players, like the monster teams aren't no more, I think.
Yeah, I think from at least what reports have been, this was like at the trade deadline, so who knows if they've changed. Trey would be moved in the off season. They would give DeJounte a half season to prove to be like their franchise point guard. And then maybe move him at the deadline next year, maybe keep him based on that. But it looked like Trey was going to be gone. They're definitely going to split up that backcourt.
Where do you see him going?
Lakers, Spurs have been linked. I don't want him on the Lakers personally. I feel like once LeBron's gone, I want to keep the core we have and add a star via free agency, not through a trade, because then we're kind of breaking up all the talent, and then it's just AD and whoever we bring in. Because to get Trey, it would be like Reeves, Rui, and picks, and then you're not re-signing D'Lo at that point either, because you can't have that backcourt. So it's like,
I think the Spurs might be.
Spurs with Wemby would be very interesting. That'd be fire. I think that's probably the best fit. And they have a lot of Atlantis picks from when they traded for DeJounte, so they could kind of just say, okay, here's your picks back. You can go rebuild, and we'll take Trae Young to pair with Wemby.
But they might be good. Those picks might be worth not might be worth anything.
That's which true. Is like, yeah, that's true. It's a tough situation.
The NBA will make it happen. They'll make something happen for Wemby, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm counting on them.
That's why the West, like this year, we've talked about it, is already really crazy. Next year, we're going to have the Grizzlies healthy again.
Yeah.
The Spurs are going to be better with Wemby because they're probably going to be aggressive this offseason. So there'll be probably like.
Even Houston.
Houston will be better too. So we'll have like 13 teams in the West.
I was always thinking about that. Like out of the 10 teams, like there's going to be some teams that are not here next year.
I think the Warriors right now.
Warriors is a trending one. I think that's a pretty safe bet. And then how can you kick out the other nine? It's so hard.
Yeah.
It'll be close. I think it's going to be, obviously, it'll be similar to this year because there won't be that much movement. But it's going to be like this year where the, like, 5 through 12 seeds are just going to be fluctuating up and down. And we might have another year where we get multiple, more than half of the conference over our 500, so.
I think we will.
Yeah.
I saw something today, too, that said, I wonder if free agents like Paul George are looking at Eastern Conference teams now that it's weaker. If your goal is to get to your first NBA Finals, like, as a free agent, isn't that more intriguing than re-signing with someone in the West?
Yeah. That's true. I didn't even think about that.
I think he's going to go somewhere, too, because the Clippers can't re-sign him and Harden. So they have a big decision to make. They could be a team that drops, not necessarily all the way out because they'll have Kawhi still, but I think they'll drop down to maybe like in the play-in next year because I don't think they're going to be able to bring back their whole core. This is kind of their make or break year.
Yeah, it has to be like, I don't even really see James. Well, it's weird. It's just weird. Their team's constructed different.
Like you said earlier with the role players, it's like the opposite of that. They have these names, and then after that, they kind of just pull production from whoever's on that day. But yeah, like you said, everyone leaves. It's like, well, we don't have the draft capital, we don't have the resources to kind of, you know, salvage this situation. So it would be interesting in their new arena too to see, what direction they want to go in, because
they're gonna want to win. Their owner definitely wants.
I was gonna
to
say
win.
Steve Ballmer definitely wants to be competitive in the first couple years of that arena being 100%. Built to just try to get people there.
That's why the Harden trade, if it was next year, would have been better for them as a franchise, just in the new arena, kind of establishing themselves. But it didn't work out like that. Now it's setting up to be, it might just be Kawhi there, or maybe Paul George or Harden stay, so then you have two stars. But you're not going to have the four stars right now, because Westbrook even is not an all-star anymore, Westbrook. But he's still like that caliber name to where he'll bring in fans.
I think they have role players. Terrence Mann is good.
He is.
He's a solid.
Zubac is solid.
Yeah.
Westbrook, Norman Powell could get you 30 on a random night. I think those players are good. I think the best solution for them is keep one, like, we're always going to have Kawhi, but keep one of James Harden or Paul George and try to sign one of these role players like Grayson Allen that just got signed.
I don't think they'll have money for that, though.
That's true.
Even with like just re-signing one of the stars, I don't think they'll have money to go spend. Unless they have a mid-level, I'd have to look at their financials. But that's the challenge for them. It's like maybe they do a trade too, because maybe Norman Powell, like, he's been really good, but maybe they think they're too guard heavy, so they trade him and get like a good forward or big off the bench.
Do they still have PJ Tucker, or did they trade him?
They have him. He gets very inconsistent minutes, though.
Yeah, because he's been trying to get a trade for, like, the past, like, 3 months.
But no, he didn't play for, like, a few, at least maybe a month, and then he came back against the Lakers for, like, 9 minutes and got cooked and then went back on the bench. But, yeah, their offseason is going to be crazy. Do we want to shift into awards now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, so NBA awards, they're going to be announced probably next week.
You want to start bottom down since we talked about the Bulls?
Yeah,
too?
We can.
We can go right into.
So we'll go most improved player. Oh. And Ricky, I know you were talking about him, so we'll start with you.
Oh, yeah, well, my most improved, just off the game from yesterday, I'm not even keeping his stats. I just have Kobe White. I think I talked a lot about him. I like how, you know, his journey. I like how he stepped up, and he's going to – hopefully he becomes one of those players next year and, you know, in the rotation that's good and defenses are taking notes on or actually paying attention to. So, yeah, I have Kobe White.
I also have Kobe White, and I'll read off some of his numbers since you did not.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, read off his numbers.
So last year, right, because this is the most improved player, looking from last year to this year, how'd they jump? Last year, he was 9.7 points, 2.9 rebounds, 2.8 assists. This year, he's 19.1 points, 4.5 rebounds, 5.1 assists. So you're jumping 10 in points, 2 in rebounds, and 2 in assists, basically. That's just insane to do that in 1 year. He's gone from, like, a solid bench role player to a solidified, like, high-end starting guard. So just the way he's played, and obviously yesterday he proved it. Obviously that's not a factor since it's not a regular season game. The award voters won't look at that. But just, like, his stretch in the season, too, even before that game was crazy. So
was
Kobe
really
White's definitely my pick for the award.
What do you guys think about Maxey? I believe Maxey is closing as a betting favorite for the in the gambling world, but
yep,
he's about a minus 105 favorite right now.
No,
I think Kobe White might be in second or third.
Yeah, no, Tyrese Maxey, I mean, he probably will get it just off the fact that he was the star on the team, because Joel Embiid was out pretty much through the back end of the year. But he was also going bananas. I mean, he deserved it. A lot of people deserve it. A lot of people deserve it this year. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Maxey would be probably my second choice for the award. But the reason I'm not, like, as high on him winning it is he didn't take, like, that huge jump. Like, he was already really good,
already
like,
good
almost
too.
All-star caliber player.
Yeah.
This year he took the leap to be at that level. So it's, like, he obviously improved a lot, but it's not as dramatic as Kobe White's.
Yeah, you were kind of waiting for him to break out and be that guy. And with Harden out, that was, you know, could have been the plan the whole time.
Yeah.
So, nah, I totally get, like, how a guy like Kobe White, you know.
It was more like we've seen it coming, or, like, everybody's seen it coming.
They knew that his,
like,
ceiling,
yeah,
was going that high.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
And he's a great leader, too, like, very good leader.
Yep.
See how he carries himself on the court and off the court. He's that guy.
Yeah, so do you agree, Kobe White?
Kobe White or Maxey? I don't know that I've you know, paid too close attention throughout the whole 82-game season to see, like, you know, who's been hot, who's been cold, how the ladder has kind of fluctuated. So I'm letting you guys kind of take the wheel here. And Kobe White dropping 42 in a playoff game, is just insane.
We'll play in, but
play in.
It should count.
Play,
it should count as a
play
it's,
in
it's
off.
Playoff.
Playoff.
It's
elimination.
It's postseason.
Playoff. Play in.
Postseason. Now we'll move on to Clutch Player of the Year. This one's kind of tough. There's, like, three guys that we were talking about before we got on. So I'll start with you again, Ricky. Who's your Clutch Player of the Year?
Yeah, I don't have no stats on this one either. Just off the dome.
Yep.
I'm gonna go DeJounte Murray. Off the fact that it was, like, a span, probably, like, a good three weeks straight consecutively, he had, like, a game winner, or, like,
yep,
I seen on my phone that he had a game winner. It was, and he's the hometown hero. He's from Seattle, so I'm just gonna give it to him. There's probably other people that deserve it, but yeah, I gotta give it to him just off the fact.
Yeah, no, he's up there for sure on mine. and that was the time when he was hitting those, was trade deadline D'Lo when D'Lo was going off.
That's exactly
versus the game winner DeJounte. So it was the debate for Lakers fans. Who would we rather want?
But neither of them were trying to get traded. Yeah. They're one up in each other every game.
Yep. I think, well, maybe Murray was trying to get traded. He's look at what I could do. But yeah, I got to go DeMar DeRozan. Same thing. He's just multiple game winners this year. Again, I don't have like all of the clutch stats pulled up right now, but I know he's one of the favorites for the award, and he's just every time, it's like every year, he's one of the most clutch players in the league. And this year, I know, especially down the stretch, he was having huge games when the Bulls needed to get into that play-in. So I give it to DeRozan.
I'm not mad.
Do you have the betting favorites or anything?
Yeah, so to start us off, the betting favorite, Steph Curry, is minus 150 right now. I got Steph. I think, you know, obviously he's the favorite, so, you know, that maybe that's kind of a cop-out for me, but kind of being from the Bay Area and watching both the Kings and the Warriors my whole life, like, Steph never got the flowers for being the player that he is in the fourth quarter in clutch time. I think for a while there was a stigma that, you know, during the big three, like, dynasty run, that he was, like, the least clutch out of all them, which is ridiculous. If you watch those full games, the reason why he doesn't have that many game winners or, like, buzzer beaters is because the Warriors will be up by three with 33 seconds left, and, you know, they'll go, the other team will go cut it to 1 point. Warriors will have, like, the possession with, like, 27 seconds left, so there'll be 3 seconds in between shot and game clock. And instead of, you know, missing a shot, then they go to overtime. Steph hits a buzzer beater in overtime. He'll just hit a shot with 20 seconds left to ice the game.
Yeah.
And he does that so much that, to kind of a casual NBA watcher who kind of looks at his stats or field goal percentage in the last shot, it's low, but he's doing all these things and making all these plays down the stretch to kind of not even get them to that situation where they need to be taking the last shot. Yeah, he's 94.6% from the free throw line in clutch time, and I believe he led the league in clutch points with like 5.5 or some crazy stat like that. So yeah, I think ironically the year where no one's really talking about him for any other award, where in the past it was the other way around, is probably the year he's going to get the most clutch player. So I got Steph.
So you're telling me with your life on the line, you're not going to pick Andre Iguodala to hit the final
aliens,
to hit the final shot?
Death being pointed, I'm taking Keegan Murray, guys. Yeah, Iggy's gonna come out, and 43 years old. Hey, you shoot one shot for the
that's
aliens.
Probably what it is. That's probably why everybody's mind is like that, how you said nobody really thinks of Steph as like, well, I mean, real basketball players think of Steph as, or not real basketball players, real people that watch basketball think of Steph
yes.
as a clutch player, but the outside people looking in maybe probably don't think like that. It's because the Max Kellerman.
That's actually true. I didn't even think about
that.
That definitely is a factor.
Yeah.
Which is so crazy.
No, Steph's definitely been really, really good in clutch time this year. Yeah. He's all three of the guys we mentioned, those are my top three for the awards. So I just barely give it to DeRozan over Steph. But
and not even just clutch time too, but during the Kings game, I felt this. When the other team's going on a run, he'll just get the ball and like sprint to the logo. And I swear, he misses those shots a lot, but I swear, if it's time to end a run, it goes in.
Yeah.
And like even that,
A big momentum shift.
It's huge. That's clutch, even though it's not in the fourth quarter. It's clutch for keeping them in the game because, you know, you miss a couple of those shots down the stretch, all of a sudden the other team pulls away and it's over in the third. But he's so good at, like, just going out and getting a bucket when you need it, drawing crazy four-point plays to just swing the momentum back. And he's such a, like, basketball mind, and he has such a good feel for the game that he knows when to, you know, turn it on and just kind of take over when they need to. He's got a great feel for the moment.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see who wins the award. And DeJounte, we looked at the odds as being very slept on. Like, he wasn't even top three. So.
Yes. Sorry, going back to that, Steph is the favorite at minus 150. I can't remember right now who's in second, but it's not very close. Actually, no, it is close. DeRozan is plus 120. So
I think either one of him pretty or
much
Steph
a,
will win.
Yeah, pretty much a pick 'em there. But the last two candidates are that are long shots are Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Damian Lillard for some reason is plus 8,000.
And I don't agree with Lillard this year.
Yeah.
Like in years past, for sure, 100%. But this year, not so much.
Yeah, superlatives definitely have made it to where he's kind of in that conversation. And DeJounte's not even in the top. He's not even a, like, you can't even bet on him.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, yeah. Him are not being in the top four over someone like an SGA or a Dame is pretty wild. But Steph and DeRozan, probably down the stretch, it'll come down to those two.
Do we know exactly what they're looking at? Like, is it fourth quarter points? Is
usually it it's fourth clutch quarter and, like, clutch time.
Okay.
And I don't remember like all the factors that go into it. I've seen it before, but
yeah, it's probably
last year it went to Fox and he had the most clutch points. So I think that's probably why it's gonna go to Steph. I feel like it's kind of not the best way to look at the award moving forward. I think it's just because it's such a new award, the voters haven't really figured out how they wanna view it. So right now they're just like looking up who has the most fourth quarter points and then kind of going off that.
Yeah, see, that's a hard one because like I was saying with the last award with most improved, it's kind of the same thing where you have to watch all the stretches throughout from the beginning to the end to know the not just how, you know, that individual is doing during clutch time, but the environment that the team is in game by game, like yeah. night by night. If they're getting blown out or blowing other teams out, obviously that's why they're not going to have that many opportunities. But in the opportunities that they do have down the stretch, maybe you got a guy who's really good.
I think that's kind of DeJounte because
yeah.
the Hawks weren't very good this year, but when they were close games, as you said, DeJounte was
took
multiple
over.
Game winners.
Yeah, but that makes it so that his average and clutch time points per game is less, like you were saying
yep.
earlier. So, yeah, definitely maybe we'll see some evolution with, you know,
that's what
assessed.
I think will happen over time. Yeah. It'll kind of change how the voters look at
yeah, and that was a good point about it being new, too. So, like, people, you know, are still trying to find how, yeah, what stats they want to base it off of.
Yeah.
Which is a good point.
Well, now we'll shift into Coach of the Year. And Ricky, we'll start with you again.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into this one, to be honest.
Okay.
To keep it all the way honest. But I like the OKC coach.
That's who I have.
Yep, I like the OKC coach. I mean, from playing last year to now being the number one seed, we kind of had I don't know the word, but we kind of knew that they were going to be good. Coming into this year, not as good as they are right now, which is good. He's done a very good job, especially with Chet coming back. It was a new piece that they didn't have last year.
Integrating him,
it was like kind of like just perfect. Like they had no setbacks,
yeah.
no nothing. They were on go from the jump, which I really like.
Yeah, no, for sure. I picked them. I mean, they have a lot of young talent on their roster, but. Just the way he schemed them to all fit well together and take that jump from, like you said, play into the number one seed is just – that's why I'm picking him for Coach of the Year. And I know LeBron and JJ talked about him on their podcast recently, and they just talked about how smart of a coach he was, like all the schemes and plays he comes up with. So I think if they're getting praise from them too, like that's – You know he's a good coach, so he's my pick for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, he's definitely the favorite. I'm going to go a little bit of a different route, kind of go out on a flyer. I really like Jamal Mosley of the Orlando Magic. Leading that squad who's, you know, the Magic past couple years have had such a rough time. But they're kind of the first team out of that class of 2019-2020 teams that are really bad to emerge out of their rebuild as a playoff contender. And his first year was in 2021. They finished 22-60 that season. The next season, 22-23 season, they get Paolo his rookie year, 34-48, so already a big jump. And then to this year being in just, you know, continuous growth, the Magic finish as a 5 seed at 47-35. So from his first year to the second year to this year now, and pretty much keeping the same core too. They made a couple small ads. You know, we talk about Joe Ingles all the time on this podcast. I don't know why we talk about him so much on this, but
impactful bit.
Yes, we love Joe Ingles on this, the Joe Ingles Report podcast. But the Orlando Magic, yeah, Jamal Mosley has taken that team of youngsters and turned them into very polished. Their defensive numbers and metrics are really good this year, and that I think is what stands out the most, especially, you know, nowadays where it's kind of hard to, you know, have really good team defense if you don't just have the talent and the size and like we see with the Timberwolves. But yeah, I like Jamal Mosley. Took that young team and turned him into a force.
He was definitely my second choice for the award. I kind of went back and forth between them. Like you said, just how he's been able to take that team to grow. And Franz Wagner and Paolo have definitely benefited from his coaching and the vets they brought in. Joe Ingles, again, bringing him up.
Let's go.
He's just a good coach. I mean, they're the 5 seed this year. I think they have a shot to win their first-round matchup,
I agree,
too, against Cleveland. So they're definitely a bright spot in the East right now that kind of has some teams down low that I don't know how well they're going to perform. I feel like Orlando's kind of that upcoming young team that could maybe even go top 3 seed next year. Well, now we'll move on to the sixth man of the year. And, Jalen, we'll start with you because I know you got a good pick.
Yes, I think Sacramento's own Malik Monk is going to take home that award. He missed a couple games at the end of the season. And we kind of saw, you know, that team's performance just kind of declined because all the, you know, the lineups were messed up, I think, which speaks to the impact that he's had, especially off the bench, being the first guy off the bench and also going out there and closing games too when he needs to. I think the biggest thing, I know I haven't brought up any numbers, I think he's about 15.5 points per game off the bench, which is the most in the NBA. I don't know who you guys have second, but anyway, back to Monk. The thing that stands out the most, just, you know, following Sacramento all year, I mentioned how Steph can go out and get a bucket when he senses the momentum is shifting. Monk, I think, is that guy for the Kings, especially down the stretch, you know, late in the game. If you just need 2 points to tie the game or get some momentum back, the other team's making a run, he's the guy who you bring in, and you can kind of just let him work, and he'll go get you a bucket. Whether it's an open three, that he's so good on open threes in clutch time, whether it's one-on-one, pick and roll, getting to the hoop, mid-range shot, he always comes up pretty big in those spots, and he's a big factor to why, you know, that Kings team had so much success past 2 years. Yeah, and I think he's going to get his flowers and after being a really good piece last year and run away with it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Malik Monk's game. He's a bucket. He's just one of those clear out, get out the way.
Yeah.
Bucket, but
he's got so many dunks of the years too, yeah, like candidates. Oh my God, he's got bunnies.
Yeah. I'm taking Naz Reid. I like Naz Reid just off the fact that when Karl Anthony Towns got injured, I personally thought that they were going to drop a lot in the West. But him coming in and stepping up and not exactly taking the role that Karl Anthony Towns had, but just being that extra scorer or extra rebounder or extra defender, whatever they needed to win games.
A Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, Swiss Army knife. And he really did a good job at that. I mean, they obviously had Anthony Edwards, which is, you know, a good player, very good player, and Rudy Gobert. But he completed, like, I honestly thought they were going to drop very low, like super low, once he came out. And they were winning games, and they were in games with good teams like Denver and whoever else they're playing, OKC, and, you know. So, yeah, I have Naz Reid for my sixth man.
I have Malik Monk, but Naz Reid is right there at second. Kind of like you mentioned, Jalen, just he comes up when they need him to.
Yeah, totally.
De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis obviously get most of the attention for opposing teams. And then Monk's like their X factor. Like if he rattles off a 30-point game, like that could be huge in getting a win. He comes up in the right moments, and he could score at all three levels, which is huge. I think his impact for the Kings, like you said, we saw just how they struggled down the stretch after him and Herter went down. Feel like if it was just Herter, they would have been fine.
I agree.
But losing both of them and Monk's scoring production, like, that was tough, and thrusting Keon Ellis into such a big role. Naz Reid, like you said, stepped up in Kat's absence, so that's why it's really close. Like, you could go either way. I debated with it for a while, but Monk's my pick for that award.
You know, I understand. I mean, he was leading the bench in points, or six-man points, and he's a good player. Like you said, if he didn't go out, they definitely probably would have been
They probably would have been 7-8. Yeah, maybe even probably, higher. Yeah, maybe probably
maybe not even have to play the playing game.
But Keon Ellis, he did a good job. He did a good job.
He stepped up in that game, yeah, as a 3-and-D guy. He was knocking down open shots, which is just what we need him to do. He's such a good defender. He pickpocketed Curry like crazy. There was a steal in that game that he made.
A couple like huge steals.
Unbelievable like steals. His length, such a big factor. Undrafted, too. He's a grinder. And we just need him to knock down open threes. Yeah. He's going to get so many open looks in this run.
I remember I did a mock draft a couple years ago for Clutch Points. I was writing one, and I had the Kings taking Keon Ellis in the second round. And they ended up not taking him, but picking him up.
Yes.
So it's kind of cool to see him fitting on the team. But, yeah, he's been huge. He's going to be big in that playing game. Yeah. I know we already talked about
that. He's one of the X factors for sure.
Yeah. Now we'll move on to Defensive Player of the Year, which I think Ricky and I might be unanimous with our pick.
Yeah. I have Rudy Gobert. I don't have the defense metrics right now, but just off the eye test, he's forced to be reckoned with. I mean, we talk about him all the time, about like the stuff he does and the antics, and I don't think he's really that liked in the league, but they definitely, when they look at the film, they definitely see him there for sure.
Yep.
He's definitely a problem. I think it was between him or Wemby, just off the fact that Rudy Gobert, or their team, is better, and I think his defensive stats might slightly be better than Wemby's, just off how they play. That's what I'm picking, Rudy, for my defensive player of the year.
Yeah, I have Rudy Gobert, too. Wemby and AD were behind him. He's just the anchor to their defense, and it's one of the top defenses. Again, I don't have the metrics up, but they might even be the top defense in the league.
So hard to score against them.
Yeah, he just eliminates the paint. And he's getting better on the perimeter. That's still not a strength for him. With Wemby and AD, I'll talk about that briefly. I think why they're so much lower than Gobert in the odds is the talent around them on the perimeter isn't as good.
Mm.
So Gobert, like when people look, they're like, okay, he's the best defensive player on their team, and they're one of the top defenses. Wembanyama and AD, when they're on the floor, are like very impactful. And when they're off, you could tell like the defense just shifts completely. But because of not having a great elite perimeter defender, like the Timberwolves have Jaden McDaniels, and then the Lakers have the backcourt of D'Lo and Reeves, which is great offensively, not great defensively. Wemby, who knows what the Spurs are doing? They throw out all kinds of lineups. So I feel like in like maybe next year, if Wemby gets a better like team defense around him, he'll win the award. But for right now, Gobert just anchoring one of the top defenses in the league. He's going to keep winning the award until someone else is able to get in the top 10.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think Gobert as well. I'm in agreement with you three. But I was going to talk about Wemby. Which it will kind of transition
into...
And it's
his rookie year, too. That's the crazy part.
It'll kind of transition into rookie of the year, but I think there's a lot of buzz, and I'm on board with, you know, right now, Wemby's a rookie, so, you know, we're going to lean towards Gobert a little bit, even though the eye test, he's just insane. Uses his length so well. And then after that, the defensive player of the years are going to start to roll in, and then after that, the MVPs will start to roll in, which, you know, I think that's very, very possible that next year, you know, with the Spurs maybe adding a couple pieces in the offseason and trying to compete too in the West, and like you said, maybe having a little bit better product on the court for all four quarters is really going to, you know.
That's all he needs.
Yeah, put a spotlight on his pay protection, because it's just ridiculous. Some of the blocks that he gets, some of the angles that he takes to contest, and blocking guys' shots off jump shots and kind of just, you know, getting his fingers on the ball, it's insane. So next year, yeah, I think there'll be a close magnifying glass with him with that award too. But yeah, Gobert will probably run it away with it this year.
And I think Anthony Davis is going to go down as one of the best defenders to never win Defensive Player of the Year.
I agree. Like, his paint protection is...
Do you think if Vando was playing, do you think it would be better for him?
I think he'd have a better chance for sure. I don't know if we'd be starting Vando with how well Rui's played. It's tough. In 2020, I think he should have won the award over Giannis, because AD had better numbers and the Lakers were a higher ranked defense, but AD got second that year, which still doesn't make sense to me. I feel like that was his time to win it. But Yeah, it's really tough for him because he's just so good on defense. He could switch one through five. Teams just don't want to go in the paint when he's down there. And I just don't think he's ever going to get the award because now I think Wemby is going to go on a big run of winning the award. So I think he's going to go down one of the best defensive players never to win the award, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, that's definitely possible, which is crazy to think about because he is such a good paint protector. And he's so big for that team.
And he's had plays where he switches out on like Curry and is able to stop him at the three-point line. So it's like the versatility, too, I feel like very valuable. Yeah. But he'll never win it probably. Maybe next year. Maybe he gets it.
Yeah.
That's probably his last chance.
Yeah, and he'd have to really – like being so consistent with all the numbers and his defensive metrics that he puts up is so impressive. But, yeah, he'd really have to take that next step of being like jaw-dropping, you know, moments and numbers for him to run away with it too. So
well, we'll go into Rookie of the Year, which I already know is unanimous. Because there's no argument.
He's a freak.
It's Wemby.
Yeah.
Just such a good year. I mean, he could do it all, and he's 7'4". Like, I don't know. He's the future of the league.
I think that the expectations that everybody had of him, of being that type of a certain type of player, a three level scorer, as you mentioned, as a 7'4" guy, people couldn't wrap their head around that. So it was easy to be like, okay, yeah, he's going to struggle. He needs to put on size. Joel Embiid and Giannis and guys like that are going to body him down low. But to watch him make the strides that he made, just like physically and how comfortable he was making moves from the beginning of this year to the end now, he looks like a vet
100%.
With the stuff that
he
does.
And he speaks like a vet too. He's very humble.
Yeah, that's part of that European, upbringing that he's had, being around, you know, older guys playing against older competition, forced to be a pro early in his life, helps with how he carries himself. And I think that's a nice breath of fresh air with kind of the environment we have in sports right now, of the more you open your mouth, it directly correlates to how much money you make, which, you know, sometimes is not the most attractive thing as a sports fan. So to kind of see Wemby, I just saw an Instagram post today about how like Drake wanted him at like a concert or something.
I saw that too.
And he was trying to get the team going, and Drake was like, "No, dude, we just want you." And he didn't go because of that. And I got pretty fired up when I saw that too. I like team guys like that. I like guys who want to win. And he will win Rookie of the Year this year.
100%.
Will rack up the awards in the next.
It should be
years.
Unanimous
it's gonna be scary.
Too across the voters.
He exceeded my expectations. The first 30 games, I do say I did have Chet winning. Just
it was a battle.
Success.
It was a battle. Was off
Chet, he was also.
And he'll be second. 100%.
But he's averaging. Wemby's averaging double double in his rookie year. I mean, he might be the first dude to like average like 8-9 blocks a game, like soon, like in the next 4 years, which is insane.
I don't know about that much.
I mean, I don't know the way he's.
I think he could get up to 4, maybe a little above 4, but 8-9 is a lot. But
I'd love to see it.
He's that good of a player. You never know. You never know.
Some of the stuff I've seen this year was crazy. And the fact that he played almost all the games was impressive to me. I didn't know I thought he wasn't going to play.
That was my main concern when everyone was hyping him up, was like, is he going to be able to stay on the floor? Because we saw it with Chet when he was supposed to have his rookie year last year. He went down playing a game in the summer. But this year, Chet was really healthy too. So I think both of them have really done a good job with, even though they're not necessarily like the traditional center build, they're staying on the floor.
Going back to the injury thing and him staying on the floor, that just reminded me. I went to go watch his first summer league game. I was in Vegas that weekend. And right before the game, I made my predictions for his stats. I just found it in my notes. So the summer version of me thought Victor Wembanyama was going to average 19.2 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2.5 blocks. But the big thing for me right under that, I put that he was going to play 33 games. Like, that was just one of my just predictions. I was like, I think it's going to be, you know, kind of
one of those
Chet-like
games,
where it was going to be the Spurs aren't going to contend. We're going to see this guy show flashes of scariness, and then we're not going to get to see it for the rest of the year. So, yeah, to your point, it's a treat for fans to be able to see that growth that he's had, not from year one to year two, but from the beginning of his year one season to the end of the year one season.
100%.
Which is, you know, even more props to him for that, you know, rate of growth is crazy.
And his averages ended up being 21.4 points, 10.6 rebounds, 3.9 assists. He played in 71 games.
Yeah.
So, and 3.6 blocks per game.
Yeah, he went crazy with
the in limited minutes.
He might be six.
Maybe you're
six
right.
Blocks, seven
maybe
blocks,
he will
bro,
go
I'm
up that
you.
High. You're right, because they were limiting his minutes this year.
He might get a couple quadruple doubles next year. Gonna be some
wild. So scary.
Yeah,
for the league. Bro. It's gonna totally alter how teams play them too. Like, if he does like start to average crazy block numbers, the shots of other teams in that area is just gonna go down. And that's such a hard team to match up against too. If they pick up a Trae Young, if they pick up a wing,
oh, yeah. Dude, do you think
you
now
believe, like
we're gonna
how
have
tough of a matchup that's gonna be?
Do you think now we're gonna have teams going to look at like huge bigs again, like get rid of the Ooh. Small ball just because of how Wemby's gonna be? Like,
yeah,
because like we got Edie coming into the draft. I feel like a team that wants to match up with the Spurs, like he'd be someone you
that's
want.
True.
Is he going to be able to guard him on the perimeter, though? That's the thing.
I don't know. That's the tough part.
Because Wemby could play out in the perimeter.
You're right.
And
that's why it's going to be
break,
so tough.
Because his fast break game is crazy, too.
Yep.
Like, he runs. So
it's kind of a nightmare scenario.
He's really a unicorn.
Yeah.
You really just got – it can't just be one, like, one – I don't think one person can. You got to
– But he's already averaging 4 assists as a rookie, too. That's the problem.
That's
like,
scary, too.
If he gets better as a passer, too –
And he could see everything. Right?
Yeah.
Like he probably will become a good pass. Bro's good.
Yeah, like we said, he'll be defensive player of the year probably next year. He'd be my pick right now. And MVP's coming up definitely in the next 5 years.
Yeah,
or so.
Definitely, I agree.
Well, speaking of MVP, let's shift to the MVP.
Yes, sir.
And we're gonna start with Ricky. Who is your MVP for this season?
Okay, who I think the NBA is going to pick is Jokic.
Okay.
You know, he's having double-double season, almost triple-double season.
Yep.
He leads the league in player efficiency rating and plus and minus. He's probably been leading that the last couple years.
Yeah.
This dude is just – he's one of a kind, as we talked about in the other podcast. He's just – Denver's such a hard team to match up with. And
100%.
You don't – it's just it's gonna be difficult. They're kind of like the Chiefs right now. Who I want to win? Luka. Yeah, I want Luka to win. I don't think he's going to win just off the fact the record. But you can't even say the record because the West is so stacked. It's tough. But I think he deserves to win. Luka deserves to win. Shea, I think, deserves to win, too, but that's neither here nor there. I think the NBA is going to have Jokic getting this year's MVP.
Yes. You can go ahead.
Yeah, I think
oh, my bad.
I agree. I totally agree with you. I think any other year, Luka Doncic is going to win this award with 34 points. You talked about how Jokic is almost averaging a triple-double. Luka is away from averaging a triple-double. He's got 9.8 assists and I think 9 flat rebounds with 34 points is just unbelievable. Second highest field goal percentage in his career at 48.7 and the highest 3-point percentage at 38%. That's unbelievable. I think the record definitely has an impact, but it shouldn't because the Mavs are a playoff team, not like avoid the play-in team that finished hot down the stretch partly because of the play of Luka Doncic. Luka had a 60 ball, just unreal season, and Jokic was just so quiet in how he did it because we've assumed that he's gonna go do this every night, which is crazy in its own right. So we've just got so much talent in the NBA. There's even the third, fourth, fifth, sixth place guys in other years. You put them there, and they're gonna win it. But yeah, off the top of my dome, I think Luka. You'd think he's going to win it, but I agree. I think Jokic will probably take home his third MVP, too.
So I think Shea is going to win it from the NBA.
Ooh.
Because I saw this morning his odds are now number one on the ladder.
That's good.
He moved up on
He deserves it. He deserves
for
it.
For sure he does.
And Luka is 3. My pick would be Luka. If I was a voter, I would go Luka. Like you said, the average is almost a triple-double. And I want to get more into the record thing. So the Thunder and the Nuggets are 1-2. They're tied for the same record. the Mavericks are fifth. Like, they're not that far off. Yeah. Jokic has won an MVP as a sixth seed just because he had really great numbers. That was his first or second MVP. Luka has the best numbers of these three guys. And he's on a 50-win team. If the award's just going to become, okay, whoever is the best player on the best team in the conference, like, I feel like that shouldn't be how it's done.
I agree.
It needs to be, like, how are they impacting their team? All three players are deserving of the award, but I feel like Luka deserves it the most. And he's not going to get it just because the Thunder and the Nuggets were ahead in the standings. But if you look at the second half when they finally got him, like, a competent role players to go with Kyrie Irving, they were probably one of the best records season.
Probably did have the best record out of all the teams in the whole NBA.
PJ and Washington was a great addition.
So he finally has the talent that Shea and Jokic have had, like a good built team around them. And he shot up the standings from like the bottom of the play-in to the fifth seed. And they're only seven games off of being the same record. So for me, Luka's should be the winner, but he's not going to get it.
I think the voters are ultimately looking at, like, you had Kyrie, bro. Like, you had Kyrie.
But you could do that with all of the teams.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, yeah, you can. Definitely. I do think that Shea is deserving of it.
Shea's definitely.
He's deserving of it.
He'd be my number. I'd have Jokic at three if I were a voter.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think Jokic is obviously the safe bet. I think the NBA, if the NBA does decide to pick Jokic this year, they're going to have to reset the way they vote. Just off the fact that it's like, you got to, especially with how the skill gap is becoming more even, you have to kind of give a different answer as far as the MVP voting goes. Because, I mean, at this point, Jokic could win every year. Like, you know?
Totally.
So, and then we're going to be like, oh, why didn't LeBron win all those MVPs that he deserved?
Exactly.
Prior, yeah.
Yeah, no, so, they definitely, yeah. He had MVPs he deserved that they were just like voter fatigue. They didn't want to vote him anymore. Yeah. And even going back to last year, right? Embiid won, and they were the three seed, and the Nuggets were the one seed. So to me, it's like, I don't know why the voters change like their style every year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, now that you mention it, because I remember last year thinking around this time that, yeah, Embiid's going to win it, but I would vote for Jokic. I remember thinking that last year. And now I'm kind of in a similar spot where it switches. I think with Jokic maybe being the favorite this year, I just thought of this. You guys can totally disagree. But doesn't it kind of feel like we're almost correcting ourselves as fans? Like, the voters are almost saying, hey, look, we know he deserved it last year. We're going to take into account the fact that we maybe robbed him last year into him winning it this year. Hey guys, this is Jalen from the future talking to you guys. We had a couple technical issues go down, but we really liked all the content that we, you know, put out for this episode. So we're going to leave you folks with a cliffhanger on our MVP awards, but we will start the next episode off with the MVP before we roll into whatever we have on that agenda. But yeah, besides that, hope you guys made it to the end here to get to talk to me, and hope you enjoyed the episode. Stay tuned for next week's episode, and the class is dismissed.
Thank you for listening to the Sports Report Podcast. Be sure to check out our Instagram at the Sports Report Pod for more content and to never miss an episode. We'll see you next time.
Score!